Well, hello there to all our steaming, streaming listeners out there. We're in for another podcast this week, coming to you from the VIP lounge.
The comfortable lounge
of Brady's. Just before we crack onto it, we're going to just have a quick chat with Mick Raines. Mick, we're getting some good feedback coming back from this podcast?
Yeah, I think so. It's everyone seems pretty positive about it. We're sort of getting approached by people who say they don't want to be interviewed, but then they say, but I'm available from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Not including our tonight's interviewee. We're getting each podcast, there's about 70 or 80 people listen to it. I think we're uncovering some good stories that I haven't heard of.
Yeah, sure. Same. And then obviously we covered From the Ground last week.
Yeah.
And a few of the juniors wanted to get involved with
it. Yeah, I think we'll end up getting some of the juniors on board, whether we do that as a group or one or two, or do it from when they move to Murrayfield. We'll need parental support for that one. I think the interesting thing from the training one last week was we sort of bickered a bit, but it was really about the difference in our own coaching styles.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where you're a bit harder and I'm as soft as butter.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was reflected in the way we commented on it. So that's interesting.
Yeah, but a good job. But we'll do another one from training soon enough when the season gets around.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting on. Tonight's guest is a life member of the club. Been around for a while. His daughter played for the club.
Sort of played.
She did play. Welcome, Mick McGlone.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and congratulations on what you're achieving for the Steamers. And I'm sure it's going to form a very large part of the 50th anniversary celebrations. But thank you for what you're doing, and congratulations.
No worries, Mick. So, first of all, we're going to do you a bit differently. We want to, because you're such an integral part of the club and you're such a historian for the club, rather than just go through the 40 years you've been in the club, we might break it down into decades. So today we think we'll stretch your memory.
So you're like a trilogy.
You like the trilogy.
You're like a trilogy,
it's
Mick.
It's like the Mick McGlone trilogy.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, yeah. Lord of the Ball.
Are we going to have The Hobbit?
Well,
I'm just looking at the size of those food of yours.
The house would definitely be Bilbo Baggins. Who would you be, an ant?
I'd be the very, Gandalf. That's the wise Merlin type one, isn't it? Yes. That would definitely be me.
Well, that's handy when you can paint your own characters. So we'll work for you on this podcast. We'll work through the 80s. Tell us, what brought you to the club? How did you find your way to the Steamers?
I came down in August 1978 and I was introduced to Lionel Smith, but then he forgot all about me. In 79 I went to a training run and that never happened. And then in 1980 Rod Pogson happened to wander into the court. I said, "What's your name?" He said, "Pogson." I said, "I think I know your cousin in Manly." He said, "No, that's my brother." So he was this thing we have where people know someone and get introduced to people was happening again. And his late brother was my drinking partner at Manly Court. Then I came down here, just happened to run into Rod, asked him his name, and he said, and then he got on my back about coming to the rugby, and I eventually got there. I sprained my ankle and at the first training run and disappeared for a while. But then he kept on me and I came back. So had it not been for Pogson, I would not have been here. And sad part of that was one of the first blokes I ran up Eastern Hill with was the late, great Peter McNee, Gonzo. And, of course, he passed away last year, which is very sad.
So you had sort of 3 years of like a honeymoon period coming into the Steamers, and then 1981, you started playing.
1981.
So how old were you when you started playing?
81, 57 to, I would have been 24.
Had you played rugby before?
I've been involved with rugby union for near on 60 years.
But had you been playing rugby before 81?
Yes.
Before you came to Albury?
Yes, I think I had a couple of years off. Well, I was just surfing. But prior to that, we had school rugby, and I was involved with Warringah.
Which school? You'd be a private school boy for sure, wouldn't you?
Of course, look at 100%. You. Private school written all over you.
Which school were you at?
I was at St. Augustine's at Brookvale.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Did that damage you or was that good for you?
It was good for me. In fact, yep. Although I might be suing the Catholic Church because I was never...
Can we pause it? Because you're going to go into reparations. So you played a bit of rugby and then 1981... You rocked up the training to play the season out. What sort of position were you going to be playing?
I said they asked me what position I play, and I said open side flank because it's fairly quick. And they said, "Oh, you'll make a great second round."
Yep.
But that happened to heaps of blokes. They turned up and you never got to play the position you wanted. Yep.
And were you predominantly first grade, second grade, third grade?
I was first grade the whole year in 1981. Yep. Yeah.
And who do you remember who was coaching?
The captain coach by the name of Dave McCoy, who has gone on to be worldwide head of Kellogg's and that. And Dave
McCoy. So we've had a couple of captain coaches, particularly early on. You don't sort of see them in rugby much anymore. You see them a bit in AFL.
In the early years, of course, they'd be swapping around and I'd go catch someone else. When I say I... Rod Pogson and John Coon, they'd all take turns. Buck Jones, 2 years. Dave McCoy was a rough sort of bloke, you can say that. He wasn't perhaps the most, the biggest people person, but he was a very good player. He was very tall. He'd be about 6'3", fairly heavy. He played country seconds that year. And this is back in the times when country had some very
some
good teams.
Deep player. Yeah. That was good teams. So your how was your playing career through the 80s? So you're
Start in 81. We made the semi-finals in the very last game. We just beat Army and Waratahs did us a favour of beating Wagga City, but then Waratahs beat us in the preliminary final 7-0. Which was a disgrace.
Was that first grade or?
That's in first grade, yeah.
Where was that? At Wagga, do you remember?
No, that was in the Mud Heap at Queen Street, opposite the Lauren Jackson Centre.
So down here?
Yeah.
So was that where, I think someone said, some player did an ankle on a steering wheel, a Volkswagen steering wheel?
Yeah, the whole thing was you always, we feel a duty of care to opposition teams when they played down here and if it had been raining and to tell them if someone got a cut, make sure they got some antiseptic.
Get some dead oil onto it. Yeah, I remember dead oil from down here. If we go back to that field, we're going back to that field the next year or so particularly for training, but they're getting lights and they've levelled it.
Looks pretty good too.
Will you be triggered if you're going back to an old garbage heap as watching it from the sideline?
Well, it was where I learnt to play rugby down here. I remember having to chase the ball across the road. I remember the caravan that was put there to fill all the hot food, and there was a lead that used to run from the dressing sheds to this caravan, and the lead actually cost more than the caravan did.
So that was how you catered and stuff like that. Who was your sponsor then, early 80s?
Well, we had a number of sponsors in those days. One of the best
Who was the pub sponsor, I should
say? Oh, the pub sponsor was always the Star Hotel in those days. Star Hotel has always been the spiritual home of the Steamers.
That's interesting you say that. It's. Do you think the Steamers will end up back there?
I don't think so. I think the culture of the club has changed because we have so many young people in, but those young people have children. In my day, we had a lot of
You were the children.
Yeah. But we didn't have kids to have to worry about. I mean, the women would come around and drink us under the table. But these days, the
it's players much more family got, oriented.
Yeah, more family oriented. And it, yeah. I mean, it's brilliant for them at the back.
Here at Brady's.
At Brady's.
Yeah.
The only thing is, and I've heard this before, but I disagree with it, and I think it's a rather selfish point of view, is apparently a few of the people are a bit upset that they don't come down the pub on Tuesdays and Thursdays and drink, which is very short-sighted. I mean, society's changed.
Yeah,
we have kids and that's it.
We have kids and it's $10 a schooner. Yeah. You can only do that so many nights a week.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
You know.
But having dinner at the clubhouse on a Thursday night where the players get to sit around after training's probably not too bad.
That's a good thing.
But that's been pretty good to try and build some sort of camaraderie with the guys sitting
Excellent. The problem you've got is if you want to have a ladies team, those lady teams are probably going to be there where the husbands are and things like that. We used to have things like pie nights and stuff like that. And if you have something that both parents can go to, plus the kids, and it's organised properly, well, it's not a problem.
I think there's been a lot of focus on families over the last few years, which is for the better of the club.
For sure.
You know, for sure. So you're 81, 82... What
82 was a disastrous year. Mick Scott.
Do you want to just skip it?
Yep. Mick Scott came back and coached, and unfortunately, he just didn't have the cattle. And some of the blokes were a bit. I mean, I can't remember the exact story, I'd get it wrong, but.
Just make it up, Mick. No one's going to pick me on it.
No, the whole thing was that Mick just didn't have the cattle to play with.
Yeah.
And it was disappointing. That's why I was so happy when he coached the side to the first premiership
in 87.
So did he
step away from coaching for a bit?
Yeah, in 82, didn't see much of him after that.
How were those years coming up to the sort of 83, 84, it's a bit...
83 was pretty ordinary, 84...
How does the club stay together? How does the club hang in there? Why don't we fold?
Well, who knows what might happen in the next couple of years, but I think...
let's stick to the 80s.
I think the reason the club stuck together during those years was because of the excellent support of the women. But also we had some very good administrators as well. We had, presidents. We had Rod Poxon, Lachlan May, Graham Mitchell was a treasurer that they used to call Open Palm. You had people like Johnny Coon, blokes there. These were men. They really knew how to run the club, how to lead, and things like that, including Lachlan May. A lot of people like to be critical of Lachlan, but I thought he was outstanding.
So when the club's struggling on field, it was important that the club wasn't struggling off the field.
That
sort of held it together.
Yeah, it was everything not to struggle.
So come into so we've just skipped through the struggle years a bit. 86, 87,
I think you've got to go back to 84 because Graham Mitchell decided to coach and had his first year as coach.
Yeah.
And they looked certain to take the flag, but they got beaten by June E up in somewhere in Wagga Way, I can't remember. And that was a huge shock.
June E
beat us, yeah. Steve Wilson was their captain coach and they had blokes like... can't remember.
Don't want to remember June E players. So did they?
But they beat us in the minor semi-final.
Oh, right, okay.
And then won, and then got beaten in the major, and then got beaten in the preliminary final themselves.
Oh.
So that cost us dearly, and feel so sorry for Graham Mitchell. But the following year, a gentleman by the name of Ronald Graham, turned up.
Ronald Graham.
Wallaby.
Yeah?
Yeah. Do you not know Ron? Ron played about 18 tests for Australia.
Did he win the British Low Cup?
We were winning it back then. We can talk about the cricket house if we need to just keep you on.
Where's the score there? Mind I see. No, Ronald was, he was the leader of men too.
Yeah.
He had a very senior position at Uncle Ben's. He was sort of like top
Another
man.
Uncle Ben's. Jeez, yeah. A lot of people come through Uncle Ben's.
Oh, the Cup would have been rooted if it hadn't been for a couple of organisations like Uncle Ben's, which really attracted, brought a lot of players to the club. The state office block, we had the Department of Primary Industries, probation and parole, land conservation, all that. So I remember Jeff McAvely told me that it was great working in probation and parole and being in the state office block because all he did was talk rugby union. He'd go down at that morning tea and there'd be John Sykes and Ted Scarlett and these sort of blokes, all rugby union blokes.
And at probation and parole, all his clients would be leagueies, so he could just say, no, you've got
Pat might not say that to him. We'll get into trouble that one, but anyway. It rolled.
So what was his role, Ronald Graham, in 85?
In 85, he just helped out the coaches if he was asked to. Ronald would never put it. In fact, I was speaking to Ron yesterday because, as you know, we've put a thing out through Don Cameron to get some players from overseas. Yeah, yeah. And I've gone through my cousin at Ringo, who was president of the President's City and went on to, was on the board in New South Wales. But I rang Ron and said, listen, mate, we need girls in particular.
Yeah.
Have you got any contacts overseas?
Hmm.
Or any contacts at all? He said, well, I'll have a think about it and get back to you.
Okay.
So, you know, that might be...
So he wasn't playing in 85?
No.
He'd retired?
He had long retired.
Right, okay.
But as a matter of interest, he was the second speaker the club ever had. The first bloke was a bloke called Steve Finane, who a lot of people will remember as the man who wrote It's the Game They Play in Heaven.
Oh, really?
And he was our very first speaker. And there's Ron Graham. And then, of course, we had blokes like Alan Jones, Norman May, and the other bloke.
What are they called, Norman May? The Golden?
The Golden Voice.
The Golden Voice.
Bray, Gordon Bray. Just stop me when you need to.
Yeah, all right. So coming in, I'm just trying to get to coming into 87.
Yep.
So do you think that 85, when you had Ron Graham push the club a bit, or get involved a bit, did that start to catalyse what was to come?
I think in 84 started with Mitchell.
Graham Mitchell.
And we had new players come in. There's a bloke called Astro Boy as the
That wasn't his ball.
No, his name was Neville something or other, but they just like to put shit on him.
Was he called Astro Boy?
I don't know. Got no idea at all. It was just a way of the Waratahs blokes, one bloke in particular, mixed four, tried to upset us, I suppose. 85 with Graham, and then in 86 we ended up with this committee that just you couldn't believe. You know, it was just unbelievable. You had Tony Fountain as president. Vice presidents were John Wanklin and I think Ron Graham.
Yeah.
Secretary was Derek Norkey. And then us kids that have been there for a number of years, we filled in the other positions. So in 86, we really got going.
And the club had a bit of success on the field.
Oh, yeah. 86 was, don't know how the second and third grade went, but 86 was the year that we got beaten by Ag College. And you would remember yourself,
I think,
Michael.
86 you won the premiership in second grade.
Yes, quite possibly think, did.
Yeah.
Under the Kiwi bloke, lovely bloke.
So what were you playing? Were you still playing here, 85, 86, 84, 85, 86?
Yeah. I'm still playing, but I dropped back a fair bit as far as I played a fair bit of second grade as well. Of course, by then I'd really got my teeth into being the publicity officer for the club.
And so where were you working at this stage?
At this stage it was a bit of a problem because I was working at Corowa and then on the relieving staff of the courthouse. So
you're still in the courthouse, you haven't moved to the Board of Mail?
No, I didn't move. Well, what I was doing is working in the courthouse, but working part time at the Border Mail. What they used to call a junior stringer.
Yeah. Right. And so, 86. Did you play in that grand final, the second grade grand final?
Not that I remember, no.
I think it was an eight. Was it? Who was talking?
John Shepherd was the coach, I think. Kuwa Blake.
Well,
I think
that might be one of Barrel's conversations.
No, Gordon was talking about the second grade grand final. I'm sure it was 86.
Yeah, it could have been. I'm sure it would have been. I think there's a bloke called John Shepherd took it to two premierships. He was very good, very, very, very good footballer.
What do you remember from the 87 grand final, first grade, the first grand final? What do you remember from that year and that game?
Well, 87 was fairly close all during the year. I think they beat us.
Who's they?
Waratahs.
Yeah.
They beat us in the first round.
Were you playing?
Came back. No. I was captain coach of second grade. Right. I was coach of second grade, as Gordon has pointed out to me.
What's the difference between captain coach and coach?
Well, captain coach means you're the captain and the coach.
You weren't the captain.
I'm saying then, but there was another bloke on the photo that says captain, so we'll have to.
You'll have to arm wrestle.
And I don't want to upset Gordon by.
He's a big boy, he'll be right.
Yeah. But 87, we had three teams in the grand finals. First, second, and third grade were all in the grand final. Third grade got ripped off because they had to play a new Deniliquin first grade team.
Because Deniliquin didn't have other grades?
Yeah, they did. They had a first grade side.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I reckon I got ripped off. My players got ripped off because we played RAF in the grand final, and they couldn't play, they reckon, because their team was too small. But come grand final day, they had the two biggest second rowers or locks in the business.
We used to play cricket against one of those guys. Yeah. He would have been 6'5".
Oh, he's a massive big fella. Yeah. So that was the problem. But come first grade, we're going, oh my God, we can't sort of get in and lose all three grades. Come first grade, it had been unusual up until then. We got beaten by Tumut in the last round of the competition. And Dave McNaughton and Craig Childs got injured against Wagga City, and Hugh Mayo and Spoofer were playing for Wagga City.
Had he left the Aggies by that point?
Oh, yeah. Spoofer and Hugh Mayo both had joined Wagga City.
Yeah.
And I think McNaughton and Craig Childs both got leg injuries, and then we got beaten by Tumut in the last game, and then we come to the grand final in 87 or the finals, and Tumut playing Waratahs. We beat Waratahs. I think Barrel told us the other night we beat Waratahs. Eric Wise, the label, and there was something of a stint in that Warwick and. What's his name? That was the referee, the Waratahs bloke, who became a very good referee.
Sam Wilkinson.
Who?
Murray Wilkinson.
Murray Wilkinson.
Yeah.
Silly buddy Murray. Good bloke. Good mate of mine. He decided he would stir up Sam Fingatonga. Well, of all the blokes you wouldn't pick, it would be Big Sam. And old Murray ended up getting the one-step, two-step. Look out for your face, it's just got busted up.
Yeah.
So then they didn't play him. Then the following week, we had off, of course, because we beat them in that major semi-final. But they had to go up and play at Tumut. And I remember standing on the sideline thinking, please, please, God, don't let Tumut win this. Don't let Tumut win this. Because we knew what Tumut were like. They were super speedy out wide. And with Mick McTaggart directing things, and Johnny Arrigan, John Gray.
So you went up to watch that game?
Oh shit! Yeah, my team were playing in the in the preliminary final, but we would have been up there to watch it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that I both did. But Waratah's good, like, thank Christ. We can't say Christ.
No, no, Karen. Yeah, sorry.
And then from there we went to the grand final where we played Waratahs.
Right, we're just going to pause it before we get to the grand final in first grade. Yep. House, what are you doing?
No, I was just going to say, we brought Emma Clemenson and we shut the door and everybody was piling in to come in and have a listen. We bring Mick McGlowan, nobody wants to come in and have a listen.
Mick McGlowan didn't want to come in and have a listen too.
I'm not sure what that commentary is alluding to, but yeah.
But while you're on there, McClements, there's another great example of what's happened with the club over the last 5 or 6 years with the females. I mean,
she's a car wreck, is that what you're saying?
No, she's outstanding.
Yeah, she's our go getter.
Yeah. Well, her and my own daughter, Emma.
Yeah.
Club captain and buddy. And she learned everything she knows from house, apparently.
We're going to, we'll come back to the 2000s. Mm-hmm. So we've got a big, that'll be 3.0. So the first grade grand final. So not so much what happened. We know what happened. Do you remember how you were feeling? Like how you felt before that game, given we hadn't won a first grade grand final, and how you feel after the game? Do you remember that
June
pans out?
I hopped off.
So you had just lost a grand final that day?
Yeah.
Not you personally, but you guys had got beat.
Yeah.
Yep.
And sick to the stomach. Look, I can't claim any great ability as a coach, but we had a bloke called Brian Mansfield, who also was Wallaby, who played, and he was really the coach. And I felt really sorry for him. And I felt really sorry for my boys because people like... like Dicko were supposed to play first grade that day, but didn't because there wasn't room for him. It was just heartbreaking.
Who got to sit on the bench? Because then that time it's I think it's only 3 or 4 players on the bench and there's no rotating players. There's no 3 front rowers. There's none of that.
Yeah, I don't know if we had anybody on the
bench. We have a photo of the 1987 team?
Yeah, there'll be a photo out there. Yeah, might have the bench players there.
The bench players would be, if for memory, would be something like Ian Dixon, Lionel Grace, and I don't know.
And do you remember how, so you're miserable.
Yeah.
And then we've got 80 minutes of rugby ahead of us. Do you remember how you felt or how that panned out?
Sick to the stomach. So absolutely sick to the stomach.
Because you're nervous. You're sick to something about losing and you're nervous about what was coming up.
Mm. I thought, we can't go through with losing all 3 grades. And of course, the Waratahs, they were pretty cocky. They thought they were pretty.
They had all their moleskins on and the R.M. Williams. Yeah.
And very harsh one. But they had me worried. But they didn't start with Murray Wilkinson. They had this other bloke, I think, who used to play for Chalkies by the name of Mick Ryan or Mick O'Ryan or something like that. Mick Watkins.
Watkins.
Was it?
Maybe, I can't remember.
But they started with him. And then they switched and they brought Murray on. And I started to relax a bit then. Of course, the second scrum, this very deep English Midlands voice said, "Cut it up, Murray. That's why you didn't start in the first place."
So who's that? Who are you impersonating there?
Paul Megerson. That's what I said, that Midlands voice. And then I started to feel a bit better, but it really started to get really well when they kicked the ball back to us. Then it go to Craig Childs or Craig White, and they just kicked the ball back over the dead ball line. And of course, in those days,
it was a 22 tap or dropout or something.
Dropout.
So when back in the day, we used to go dead.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then I shoot myself when Waratahs...
Did you really, or just figuratively?
Figuratively.
All right, okay. That might have come later.
Yeah. We were there, and they had took a short 22, and Rhys Grant has grabbed it.
Yeah.
And gone about 80 metres, not 30 metres, that I think Barrel said. Yeah. He's gone about 80 metres. And I thought, oh, fucking trouble here. But then we turned around, worked it back, and then the best thing I've ever seen in my life, because he's a cheeky little bastard, although he's a mate of mine now, but back then you were allowed to balk if you're the halfback.
Yes, yeah.
And I think Beryl touched us the other night, and he picked the ball up.
Who's this?
McNaughton.
Dave McNaughton, yeah.
At the base ruck and went balk once, balk twice.
And he got him.
And then but he raced over to the Waratah sideline and said, I didn't get one, I didn't get two, I got three of you pricks.
Was he responsible for some jumpers going missing?
Did he have to bring that? I was actually the Riverina manager.
These were under your care.
Yeah. As to whether I lost a whole lot of jumpers, I can't say. I know some went missing, and whether it was Dave or not, I can't say.
The statute of limitations is long gone.
Yeah, but it would not be right. But I know one thing that did happen. Greg Barlow admitted it to me, and then some other blokes didn't. I had a pullover. It was the very last one for Riverina Rugby Union, which was just had Riverina Rugby Union black on a white thing.
Yeah.
And Barlow, the worst, suspicion got the worst of him, and he came and saw me and said, Mick, that jumper of yours, I gave it to McNaughton. And I saw McNaughton. McNaughton said, bullshit, I never saw it. I think Gonzo's got it. In other words, I did have it, and I gave it to Gonzo. And I saw Gonzo in Queensland a couple of years later.
Who's Gonzo?
Peter McNee, Barry McNee's brother, who was the hooker.
Yep.
In 87 grand final, and he died last year, and Gonzo said, oh no, that went to the tip years ago. And I never forgave those blokes for that. That really, and Dave McNaughton and I had a real falling out about jumpers being stolen and stuff like that.
Right, now we've digressed there a bit on your poor jumpers. I brought it up, that's fair call. After the grand final, the whistle's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who was referee?
Yeah, the referee.
The commandant?
No.
He would have been around about then.
The referee was...
It wasn't Paul Berrington.
It wasn't Gus, because Gus did the year before. He cost us at premiership. No, not the year before. A couple of years later, maybe. I can't remember. It's a bit fuzzy that. But the referee that day, I thought it might have been Peter Knight, a dentist. Do you remember Peter Knight? He was a dentist in Wagga.
I remember the dentist. I remember the commandant. I remember Paul Greentree. I remember a few of them.
But I think it might have been, Peter Knight, so I'll have to look that up.
That's all right. And so the whistle's gone.
Yep.
What happened?
Oh, people just gone berserk.
Explain, can you, from what your memory's at, paint us the next 2 days. From 5 o'clock, we're at the cricket ground in Wagga, near the Sportsman's.
Yeah.
What do you reckon of the next 2 days?
Well, it was just total oblivion, and I don't think many people remember. I remember being on a bus coming back with John Wanklin was on a bus, and he ended up with being the choir master, and he sang the very famous song, Bye Bye Black Sheep, which meant something along the lines of, she fucked once, I fucked twice, holy fucking Jesus Christ, boy, black bird, boy. So you can cut that out, I suppose.
I can put an explicit language warning on it.
But there's just, people came from everywhere. By that stage, the Golden Oldies had been overseas on the first international tour to New Zealand, of all places. Of course, you wouldn't go anywhere else except New Zealand, would you?
So you've got that 10 years of club history, and your cherry gets popped. That's a pretty big game, and you're in 3 grand finals. I think second grade had won the year before, won the year after, sort of thing.
Could have.
So you've won a couple either side.
Yeah.
We've got Kath McGlone's turned up as well. Just for a quick visit.
He's just doing the...
So, Kath, what do you remember? We're just going to digress here. So, Mick, we've ended at 87. What do you remember from... When did you and Mick first become you and Mick?
When we'd be first... we're 81. So 79 we were...
So, your rugby What do you remember from Nick's rugby career, from Nick's playing career?
Rugby Nick?
Yep. I actually remember him playing, I think it was Griffith.
Waratahs.
No, it was Waratahs, actually. Sorry, it was. And we'd actually just got engaged. So it was 1982.
How did he ask you was that romantic?
No.
I'll take you on a bank. Come and watch me play rugby.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Think
you're a celebrant. You're supposed to have this stuff down pat.
We were sitting on a beanbag watching TV. Lying on
the floor. Hold on. You're saying you're sitting on a beanbag.
Lying on the floor, actually.
There couldn't have. I can't think of anything more romantic.
It wasn't really romantic.
In the 80s.
And then he turned around and he said, "Do you want to get married?" I went, "What?" He said, "Do you want to get married?" I went, "What?"
Oh, you didn't say
and
what
said,
why. You wanted him to keep repeating it.
I did. And then I said, "Yeah."
All right. No, so now we've established there's hard love in your life and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Did Mick have a body like Lex when Lex came out of the bathroom that day?
Actually,
yes.
Mick, it wasn't quite as good as Lex's, but I tell you what, he didn't have a bad body.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Well, Mick's, here Mick's, goes, look, there's his photo.
No, we don't want to look at
his photo.
Mick is blushing and he's speechless for the first time in a long time.
No,
so what do you remember from his playing days?
I remember him breaking an arm. I remember him nearly breaking his neck.
So injuries. Talk us through all the tries you remember him scoring.
Actually, they must have been blurred from my memory.
Was he any like five out from the line?
I have no idea.
No. What about the wins? Do you remember the big wins in the
the wins?
The big wins.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Which big wins do you remember?
God.
Through the 80s, really? We're doing another podcast for the 90s.
I don't know. I can't
the grand remember. Final? Do you remember the grand final?
There was a couple of grand finals that we were in, but I can't remember what years they were.
Yeah. 87.
I remember there was one when I was, I don't think it was 1990, the year Emma was born. I don't think we got into the grand final, but we got into the finals, or close to the finals, and I kept saying, push, come on, we're just about to get over the line, and everyone's going, stop saying push, because you'll be the one pushing soon. So,
well, we're all a bit hazy.
I had a few injuries, so I went over on my neck up in Wagga one day, and Kath shit herself, and I broke my wrist in a pre-season match. And then I did my ACL, which put me out of the game for basically 2 years.
Yeah. Was that from dancing, Mick? We actually played.
Sorry, Kevin.
I actually do remember the very first game of rugby that I went to watch, and it was a Griffith game. And I think you were playing number 8 at the time.
He must have been captain if he's number 8.
And one of the Griffiths boys turned around and said, Get number 8. And I turned around and said, "You get number 8, you've got to get me first." That's about it.
Yeah. There you go. So you've married a protector.
Now.
A cheerleader and a protector.
Now.
Yeah.
I suppose you gave birth to the very club captain.
We're going to, we'll actually do, we'll interview you on your own, Kath, at some point. We'll do you. We'll get M down as well. No. I can't edit this, so it's good. We'll interview you guys as well. So we're going to come back to you, Mick. Sorry.
Yes.
Thanks, Kat.
Get a drink.
Thanks for interlude. So 87. We don't really remember the next few days.
I remember being down at the Star from early in the day. To finish up late that night at Taco Bill's.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Was that when it was downstairs? They used to have a downstairs.
It was always downstairs. It's gone upstairs, has it?
It's down. Well, was that when it's down where the old ice creamery was? They used to do it down there somewhere?
No. Oh, I thought it still was Taco Bill's.
But anyway, so that's where you ended up.
So we went down there and we kept going there all night. And then someone decided to do Sunshine Mountain. And I don't think it was Barrel. I think Barrel had decided he wouldn't be able to balance on a chair.
He wouldn't be able to do it well. His member was in danger.
Yeah. I know the name of the bloke, who I reckon it was, but I won't mention
and,
it.
And what happened? Where were we?
We
Taco were, Bell's.
Taco Bell's. And
what happens by the end of this song? We're standing on chairs and stuff and
not sunshine, a lot of clothing. Sunshine Mountain. Yeah. Pieces all go. Haven't heard it for a while, but Barrel was definitely the choir master for that. And Allegretta, yeah.
Justin Clancy used to trot out that song a bit.
Yeah, we had some very good choir masters. None were in the same boat as John Sykes, who had this thing that he learned called Powerfang. So everywhere, if the gun was sort of like going off as bang, he had to put FA in front of it or something, so it's Powerfang. And I was in New Zealand with him and Sean Gorham when he did it at a party.
Yeah.
And just put the house down. In fact, on the final night we were there, they were going to take him down the street and put him on a buddy on a box and get him to do it again down K Road. He was very, very good at
it. Sorry, Mick, how did the 80s finish up as a player for you?
It finished up very well because somehow the third got going again thanks to John Scarabellotti and Lance Kedward in particular. And in 89 we played the grand final against Waratahs and we beat them. And sorry. And we won the grand final. I think we got beaten the year before.
Yeah.
And we made up for the next year by beating Waratahs. I think 9-0. Todd Patterson kicked three penalties.
Sorry, I just got distracted. The our winning voucher from Brady's Trivia, which you're welcome to come and join on Monday nights, has just turned up. So. Right. That was 1989.
Yeah.
Won another grand final with third grade.
Third grade.
We've got to get these grand finals up on our flag.
Yeah.
So I don't think I think it's missing a few of the 89s and some of the second grade ones earlier.
All the second grade ones, as you know, I'm working on the 50th anniversary, but it'll also be.
We're going to talk about that.
Fairly slack at this stage, but yeah.
So the 80s finished on a good note for you.
Oh, exceptional.
So outside of being a player and a captain and a coach through the 80s, did you have a role in the committee or role in the club?
I think my claim to fame will always be as the publicity officer. Although I did some other things.
This is through the 80s, so we just sort of, because your role changed a bit coming.
We kept finding new things we could do. I did the morning memos, I did the rugby radio half hour on 2 RAM.
Half hour?
Yeah, half hour. Played a few.
Wow, bring it back, eh?
Cows was talking about
the rugby radio half hour on 2 RAM, the morning memos, and a few other things we did. The 10th anniversary booklet, which I think most people have seen by now. It was just something I got my teeth into, something I
was. And you enjoyed it, and that was. Oh, yeah. And it kept you.
And because of it, I got a very good career out of it.
Yeah.
So, a very good career.
So that 80s, so you mentioned John Pogson and guys like that and John Sykes and Linus Smith from back in the day. Do you have friends today from those days, from those early 80s?
Well, Pogson is still one of my best mates, him and Gordon McBurney and Linus Smith. Those three blokes are my best friends in Albury, if not all over generally.
Where did me and House rate in
there? Oh, you're just...
We're top 10?
I wouldn't call you friends. You're too big for me. That would be...
Oh, my God. We're getting totally dissed.
Yeah, no, you're legends.
Are we in the top 20 of your friendship?
Oh, you'd have to... Well, I wouldn't call you friends because you're legends. It wouldn't be right if I tried to. House never talks to me anyway, so it doesn't matter.
He doesn't talk to anyone.
Yeah.
Unless you're.
Pogson got here in 76 and started. He ran into a mate called Tony Berkman.
Yeah.
down the road and asked him what he was doing. He said, listen, I'm playing rugby for the Steamers Rugby. Why don't you come along and have a look?
And that's where...
That's how he got in. So he started in 77. 77 also saw Lioness Smith come to the club. He only stayed till about 80-something. Then he came back for a long time. Was one of the best administrators the club's ever had.
Sorry, Mick. So we'll give those guys a chance to come through the early 70s. I know you've got a big history there, but we want to sort of just stick to the 80s because you're getting multiple podcasts. So we're going to come back to you for the 90s at some point in the next week or so. Do you have any questions for the 80s for Mick House?
How many tries you scored in the 80s, Mick?
How many tries I scored? I scored about as many as you did, running 50 yards to score. I remember one time against Ag College picking up the ball 10 yards out, and when they saw I was going to charge over the line, they all dispersed to the wings.
Is that you or is that House?
That was me. Apparently it was a House-like performance.
So do you remember scoring tries?
I scored a few tries. I was more a goal kicker than anything else, strangely.
Oh, really?
What
was your prop for the ball? Was it a pile of sand?
A pile of sand.
Or a plastic.
And I think about it now, I thought, I couldn't kick off those plastic trees because mine was sand, high, ball, lace down, flat, and pointed up like that. And
Melbourne Eagles style.
Yeah, there was a lot of that back in the day.
And of course, it allowed you to allow for the wind.
Sorry, we're just going to get Rob.
Is this a celibates meeting?
No, this is not a celibates meeting.
You two organising the sort of a love affair between these two
players. Are you calling me a celibate?
So we've got Rob just rolled up and intervened in our podcast.
Yeah, good on you, Rob. Who do you want to do a commercial?
He wants to celebrate the celibates.
We kicked. I remember I kicked four goals one day at Ag College.
A bit of a trick, a bit of a feat, because that was a leather ball too. They weren't an easy kick.
But I found them easier to kick than they with the balls now.
Oh, really?
They were big and puffy.
If they were
wet, different, but. When they're pretty good. And I kicked a few field goals and I scored a few
tries. So you're...
I didn't play... Well, you know what? I could never claim to be a Steamers player because all up, I reckon I had a total of about 50 games for Steamers, which for a bloke who was involved with the club for 40 years, as you said.
Well, if you played 10 years, you've had more than 50 games for the Steamers. Or 50 first grade games.
Yeah, I think 50 first grade games would pull it up.
The first year,
we played 22 games.
We had 11
clubs.
So I think those big years changed about 2014. Mm. So we had those big 18 games, 20 games, 16 games, and then it just dropped off the side of a cliff.
Yeah. When I was playing, we had Brassville playing and Army were playing, so there was an extra two games.
So, sorry, Mick. So one thing I was just thinking about, you've been in the club since 1981, more so, to now, which is, what, 43, 44 years?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you've gone to every home game?
I can't think any that I would have missed.
So you're looking at, say we average 10, you're looking at like 450, say, home games you've been to as a player, an administrator, a viewer, and then you've got 10 or so years of away games as well. So it'd be well over 600 or 700 games, game days. So I'm not talking more than one game. So that's a fair feather in the cap.
It just happened that way. The feathers weren't sort of flying around in caps anywhere, but it was just something you were part of and you really enjoyed.
Well, there wouldn't be anyone, many in the club that would have been to as many games as you have.
There wouldn't be anybody in the club.
Troy Tatchell's going to give it a crack, but
he'll go close. Even Troy, as far as playing goes, and he's a great man and a real club member, but you've got to remember, we're missing blokes there when we think about it, like Rod Pogson, Chris Knight, and a few others that played a lot of games. Pogson and Knight in particular.
That was digressing a bit. That was more talking about your longevity.
Yeah. And I deflected that fairly nicely, I thought.
Yeah, well, let's just stick to, you've probably been to 600 or 700 games of rugby for the Steamers over the time.
Yeah.
So we're starting to wind up. Anything, House, you got anything?
You look disappointed that young Dave didn't carry on a rugby career with the Steamers?
Boy, I don't want him to listen to this, but I have to say I was broken-hearted. Absolutely broken-hearted. He just got involved with his mates playing at the Albury Football Club. And then a few of his mates went up to Bulio, and that was it.
That was it. But, so speaking of family members,
yeah.
Who's the best player in your family?
Easy got to be Evan McLeod.
I would...
Do we get a vote? No, in your immediate family, let's not go extended.
Okay, I would have to say raw talent-wise and for enthusiasm, it would be Emma McGlone. And I remember, and as a father, I probably had a tear in my eye, going to a wedding one day. I was dressed up in a kilt and all the rest, et cetera, et cetera. And she went out and put a rugby jersey on and did her hair and these braids and actually had a photo taken down at Murrayfield. And things were, if this doesn't make my dad proud, I don't know what will. So to be in it, all she... I said to her, you love your rugby, don't you? She said, no, I love the Steamers. And yeah. She grew up with the Steamers. She loved it. Paul Megason's one of her favourite people. Julianne's one of her favourite people. And these are just people that...
We'll interview Em and get her to give her a chat. But me and House both vote that Em's the best player in the family. Just to be clear. Just before we wind up, you're going to get three cracks at it, Mick. We want you to name your three best players, Steamers players, that you played with or saw or whatever, just through the 80s. So we'll come back to when we do talk to you through the 90s another time.
Oh, the 80s, Greg Childs.
So who? This is 3-2-1. So who gets you?
Andrew Bell, 3.
So he's the best one you've seen ever?
Yeah, Andrew Bell's the best footballer.
Was he in the 80s?
I
don't think he was in the 80s.
No, he didn't play in
the 80s. He's a 90s guy.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Well, okay, 80s. We'll go Greg Childs.
3 or 1?
3. Mick Alexander was there.
He's in the 90s.
90s? Jeez. Yeah.
Do you want to go through some names? I'll wreck out some names and see if that... You've got Craig Childs?
No.
Greg Childs was the better
player. Greg Childs is the best footballer.
What about old Craig Smith?
Don Cameron, Brock Bauer, Brian, Rod Pogson.
Rod Pogson.
Brian Adamson.
Rod Pogson, you'd have to have there because he played first and second grade for Manly. Mick Scott played second grade for Randwick. And the only reason he played second grade was because he was up against... some bloody...
The front row.
Johnny Maxwell.
Yeah.
And blokes like that. I didn't play with Richard Champion, but he was certainly champion by nature. But of the blokes I saw in the 80s, Dave McKay, Rod Pogson.
Can we put them in order?
Yep. Rod Pogson.
Is your best?
Yes.
Yeah, right, okay.
Dave McKay.
Yeah. What position was
Dave McKay? Was number 8.
Yeah.
And Dave McNaughton.
Alrighty. So we'll get you a crack at the 90s and the 2000s in later podcasts.
And I'll try to look up some others. I can't think of anybody in the 80s other than those guys that stood out to the extent that my... they've really grabbed my attention.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's all right.
Folks like Peter McNee, he was a great footballer.
There's no right answers
here. Dave Carey, there's no right answers. You completely wrong.
Yeah, we are recording. So that was Keisha. We're just piping in, lecturing House. Sorry, we'll start winding up. So House, what have you got to add?
Well, I'd like to just say thank you very much, Mick. Appreciate it. If you're ever looking for dinner, or want to play trivia on a Monday night, come down to Brady's Railway Hotel.
Members draws on Wednesday nights.
Members draws, if you're a member.
Which is where we are right now.
Yeah.
Mick.
No, we're very thank you, Mick. We'll catch up with you for the later podcast. If you're listening, make sure you can listen to this on Spotify or Apple. Make sure you share it, follow, like it, do all that.
Mm-hmm.
Mick, anything you'd like to add?
In all seriousness, as I said earlier, congratulations to two of you. It's going to be a great adjunct to the 50th anniversary, and not to say congratulations, but also thank you, because it'll be a great thing to bring a few memories about for the 50th anniversary, and I think it'll be a good thing. I intend to everybody I know for the 50th to write to them and say, have a listen to these.
Let's get it out there.
I think what this will do, and I think I'd really like everybody to remember that being a member of a rugby club is something that is very, very special. It can't be replicated in another form of life.
No, we've talked about that. The friends you make, for those guys that hang around in the rugby clubs, those men and women, they're lifelong.
Yeah.
For sure.
We've certainly got a few of them.
Righto. Thanks, Mick.
No worries. Thanks, House. Thanks, mate. Thanks, House.
Cheers.
Thanks for actually talking to me, House.